Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles. This episode is brought to you by the Chuck Peterson Memorial Fellowship. The fellowship was established by Chuck Peterson's family and friends to assist upper-level students in the film and video program at GVSU who are working on creative projects that support the nonprofit sector in their community. Kyle Machame, the 2020 recipient of that fellowship, describes the benefits of the support he received.
When going through this fellowship, there are three separate parts of yourself that I think get to experience a lot of development. The first is as a student, because this is a learning process. You get to learn how to work with the client on your own, independently out in the world, away from the classroom, like you would in something like producing for clients. And the second one would be as a video maker, as a video producer, as someone who has respect for the work that they're doing and wants to improve on themselves and produce a final product that can be used out in the real world. And then the third one would be as a citizen. You know, you're not making video for an entertainment value or for some kind of commercial purpose. It's for a nonprofit. It's for a direct benefit in your community. And being a citizen of that community, understanding how you can directly impact and improve it is a really valuable experience that I think the fellowship teaches you to be as a student, as a filmmaker, and as a citizen. All three of those things are directly a part of this process that you get to learn and ask yourself, how do I want to be seen and how do I want to act as these three roles?
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show.
Welcome to another episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. My name is Katie Dean. I am a 2006 film grad, the president of the GVSU Film and Video Alumni Network Board, and the Women in Cinema Mentorship Program Director. Today, we are talking all about mentorships. We have Jerry Cook. Jerry is the director of mentorship at GVSU. That's not his only tie to GVSU. He's also a proud alum. For almost 30 years, Jerry has been part of the GVSU family. Aside from his time at GVSU, he spent almost 20 years at Gordon Food Service in various roles. And for more than 8 years, he spent time mentoring GVSU students in the Seidman College of Business. Hi, Jerry. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about mentorships.
My pleasure, Katie. Thanks for having me.
So first, let's start off. What makes you passionate about mentoring at your alma mater and helping others to mentor?
Have you been to Allendale lately? It's amazing to watch the growth of Grand Valley, especially from my time. And then I had been gone from Grand Valley for a while, and I went back to Allendale as I became more involved in mentoring and coaching. And just the size and scale, and to watch this small regional university that I went to, which didn't have a lot of street cred in my day, become this big institution that's not only a university, but is part of the West Michigan fabric of the community. And if that doesn't get you excited, I mean, it's like free street cred for me, for my degree looking that much better and that much better.
Man, it just keeps getting better and better at Grand Valley for sure. So what mentors have you had yourself, and how did those relationships help you get where you are today?
One of the best things about mentoring is completing the circle and giving back. And everybody's been helped at some point in their life. And back in my time at Grand Valley, we didn't have mentoring programs. But we definitely had a lot of faculty, we had a lot of staff, and we had just a lot of folks at Grand Valley that were willing to help people out if you knew how to ask for that help. I had a turbulent set of undergrad years. I was in a, late teen, early 20-something who was sure of everything and didn't know anything. And I had mentors directly at Grand Valley who helped not only kind of point the direction, but keep me out of trouble. And the first one of those that I would recognize is Bob Stoll. Bob Stoll is director of student life for 38 years. And though Bob is retired, he's still actively in our mentorship program and mentoring students. And it was the times when I came to Bob's office for office hours. Looking back now as a professional, the amount of time he would spend with any student who would walk in and set down what he was doing and turn his chair around, and we would talk. And mentoring kind of falls into two buckets, not to get too Jungian and philosophical, but I mean, there's introverts and extroverts, and I was an extrovert, and I needed not only contact, but I needed affirmation. And so Bob Stoll is a big piece of that and still helps me today. He's still a mentor of mine, and some of those mentorships become really lifelong friendships. Paul Isley, who is now an associate dean at the Seidman College of Business, he was a professor, and I was in his very first class, so we were both kind of new. So he was a new professor, I was a new student, And he tried and continues to try to teach me economics, which was not my greatest skill. But there was always something great, again, about Dr. Isley's office hours, where I could pop in and get real advice on things I was struggling with, not only academically, but interpersonally, you know, relationships, struggles that I had with family and friends. And that kind of support nowadays has been a lot more normalized. But back then, you kind of had to go and find it. And they have been kind of instrumental for me even now and throughout my career.
That's awesome. What are some other benefits of being of the opposite end of that, like being a mentor? Because you've mentored several students throughout the years.
Yeah, so I've got, I don't know, probably 18 or 19 folks who I've spent time with, and many of those I'm still in contact with. So it works both ways. And I think one of the things that really shocks people about mentorship when they be a mentor is, first, there's kind of like that whole grieving process. There's fear of, I'm not going to be a good mentor. I don't know what to say. I'm not going to be good at it. And then there's kind of like a grief process. What did I sign up for? I don't have time for this. They called me. What should I do? And then there's a negotiating process. Well, I'm only going to do this, you know, one day a week. And finally, there's the acceptance process. And I've also been mentored by my mentees. So seeing things through the lens of my mentees brings me up to speed in a way that I didn't appreciate before. I'll give you two really good examples. I get approached all the time by employers who are interested in mentorship, and they want mentorship to fix a problem. Or they say that the work environment right now is terrible and they can't get employees. And my answer to them is, well, start mentoring. And they say, I don't have time for that. Well, these are the same company leaders who would go out and pay for a study to figure out, how would I best attract a college student into my workforce? Well, don't do that. Mentor. Because the last time they talked to a college student who wasn't a family member or an employee was probably a long time ago, if not ever. So if you want to understand today's up-and-coming students, spend time with them. Also develop that relationship so that you're not going blind the next time you're looking for that intern or that new employee. But most importantly, I think right now with the burnout rate we have in our professional community post-COVID, people are looking to either get energized or get out. And somebody I worked with for many years at Gordon's, who's a professional mentor, I went to and I said, look, I have to have you in this program. And they said, Jerry, I just don't have time for this program. And I said, you need this program because when you're empty, you need to be full. And when you're full, you need to be empty. And a lot of our professionals nowadays are absolutely just swamped and burned out. And the chance for them to do something truly altruistic like mentorship doesn't come along very often. And I tell mentors, I can't pay anything, but I can offer you something that you're not going to get anywhere else. I've closed multi-million dollar deals, and that feels good. And it's fun to go out and have a fancy dinner and a couple of drinks and celebrate that. It pales in comparison to when your phone rings and your mentee calls you up 10 years down the road and says, you know what? That thing you said to me, or that thing we talked about, or I achieved that goal. You can't beat that.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful. So the next question I had, which you kind of already talked about, was this idea of the time versus benefit of being a mentor. So I don't know if you had anything else in regards to that that you haven't covered.
Yeah. So the number one question I get asked is, how much time is this going to take? And I tell people what we're looking for is we're looking for 2 points of contact per month. And I tell most mentors spend about an hour a month in the program. So if you figure you and your mentor are going to get together, or your mentorship partner are going to get together, maybe it's by phone. So I have a lot of mentors who are not even in Michigan. They've left the West Michigan area. Many of them are alumni. Some of them are abroad. And they do video calls and they do telephone calls. It all depends on what you and your mentorship partner kind of settle on. Some people enjoy that. Some people want to sit down and have a cup of coffee. So the number one thing I tell mentees is invite your mentor back to campus, whether it's downtown Grand Rapids or out in Allendale. They haven't probably been there in a while. Like I said, most of them are alumni, and it's fun to bring them back, buy a coffee and chat. But a lot of the time commitment starts not feeling like time. And I find when people do that an hour a month, so maybe 15 minutes talking on the phone twice a month, and maybe a half an hour of you scratching your head as the mentor going, man, I talked to my mentee and they said they were interested in this, that, and the other thing. I'm going to let that settle in my mind. I love to network, so we're networking. So I had a mentee that wanted to meet Elon Musk. And so we, for 6 months, launched a campaign. And I got all the way to Kimball Musk, who's his brother, when that mentee decided that she no longer liked Elon and he did something and it was in the papers and we were done with Elon Musk. But I enjoyed a whole 6 months of trying to figure out how do we work our network to connect people that may be unconnectable. And I think that idea too is, as the mentor and the mentee, you have to have that conversation about what are we going to do? And 99% of the time, the mentee has no clue what they want to do. So if you rewind the tape back to when you were at that point in life, did you really know? Or were you just answering the question from the age of five of, what do you want to be when you grow up, Katie? You know, well, if you would have asked five-year-old Jerry, he wanted to be a farmer. I thought a farmer was the coolest thing you could do. You drive tractors, you feed cows. It was cool. That's not what I'm doing today. Life changes and it changes pretty fast. So I think if you put in that hour a month, 2 points of contact, you'll find that that grows. But the mentor has to be prepared to kind of lay out the menu, if you will, of goods, of these are the things that I like to do. Does any of this interest you? And try to have that conversation. And that's the first part I would call of mentoring. And then deep mentoring, which we can talk about a little bit later on if you'd like, is that next level of that.
So I had a question on, do you have any advice for alumni who are considering becoming a mentor? And I think I really want to get into, how do they get over that hump of, I don't feel qualified for this?
If you've survived to this point, especially post-pandemic, you have all kinds of things to offer because obviously you graduated. Obviously you got a gig, you paid your rent. So some of the things that are very benign to you and I or very, very simplistic elementary are mind-blowing. And sometimes mentee just wants to talk. They don't expect you to solve all their problems. I have a little manual that I inherited from the last person who did mentorship at Seedman. And I think point number one is your mentor is not Santa Claus or the Tooth Fairy. The mentor is not there to give you an internship or to loan money from. The mentor is there to teach you or demonstrate skills that survived to where they didn't have to borrow money or ask somebody else for an internship.
This podcast does reach out to alumni as well. So some alumni graduated and never had mentors. Do you have any advice for how they can find mentors in their lives post-graduation?
I tell people that it's easier than you think. Spend some time really thinking about what it is you want to manifest what it is you want. We have a seminar called Life Crafting where we do this. And we ask just a series of questions. And the point of life crafting is don't worry about what's possible or not possible. So ultimate you actualized, if ultimate Katie could do ultimate anything on the planet, you now have the wand, you run the world. We get down to brass tacks. Where would you like to live, in the city or in the country? How would you get to work? Do you like to walk? Does that sound cool? Do you want to drive a Ferrari? If so, what color is it? What's your house like? You know, what's your family like? What do you wear to work? Do you work with people or paper? We ask all these questions and I push the participants to really not focus on what's possible or not possible because people are like, oh, I can't afford that or I can't do that. And they get this ultimate idea of kind of like, I want to live in a mid-sized city. I want to ride a tram to work and I want it to be in Europe, probably Western Europe. I love to eat mussels. I like kitschy art. And then I asked them to research that and they come up with something like Bruges, a city in Belgium. And they're like, I'm like, great. Now do the networking part that we've taught you to do so well. We always jump to networking and we don't think about what it is we want. So when we meet people, we can't broadcast our vision. And then if I start walking on and saying, hey, I want to do something in Bruges, Belgium, because I've always wanted to live there and I love eating mussels or whatever it is. And then you run into somebody else who's like, oh, I did a teaching fellowship or I know a gig or something is going to come along, but you have to broadcast your intentions. Now, this becomes very easy in the digital age because we have things like LinkedIn. So if you're somebody out there who's looking, Grand Valley alumni especially, who's looking for something, take my silly example, I would probably start looking up alumni that went to Grand Valley that live in Western Europe, preferably in Belgium, preferably Bruges. Who sells seafood? I don't know, but you can run a search to do this. And I can almost guarantee we are a community that's a university. So this whole idea of being a Laker for a lifetime has really paid off for me. Everybody I've ever approached and asked to help with mentorship, they do it. Because we're a small Midwestern university, I think, with this kind of value of we help each other out, you know, and we're not a big flashy university with a necessarily built-in rah-rah culture. We quietly get the job done. And so I think if you reach out to your fellow Lakers, it's a great place to start. But once you've solidified your vision, anybody who's closer to your vision than you are, that's to me a potential mentor. And I think most people are flattered enough and most human nature still works for a tribal society. And if you truly go to somebody and say, hey, I need your help, it works. In fact, that was one of the secret things I used to do when I collected money in my old job. I wouldn't call people up and say, hey, you owe me money. I call people up and say, Katie, I need your help. And I learned that from one of my business mentors. And I still start some emails with, hey, so-and-so, I need your help. Next sentence.
Let's get into some specific examples of how have you seen mentoring relationships help students? Like, do you have any stories you can share?
I met a student when I was a pro mentor in the program. So that's what we call our people who are volunteers, who are usually Laker alumni. And we try to pair people with a job that that student wants. So if a student's studying accounting, I try to hook them up with an accountant. They study sales, HR, et cetera. So I was paired with a student. The student and I met. We had a nice conversation. Where are you from? What are your hobbies, et cetera? And then I said, well, what do you want to do? And the student said, I have no idea. And I said, I like your honesty. This particular student wanted to learn networking and didn't have a vision. So I said, well, let's create a vision and let's start with some networking and let's do business lunches. And back in the good old days, I used to get lunches paid for by the company. So it was a nice opportunity for me to take my student and somebody else to lunch. And I said, who's your favorite professor? We're going to take them to lunch. And then we're going to take their boss to lunch. And then we're going to take their boss's boss to lunch. And we're going to do this. Have you ever met T. Haas? I asked the student. The student's like, no. I'm like, you know who T. Haas is, right? Yeah, he's the president of the university. I said, you and I are going to get a meeting with T. Haas. I don't know if we're going to get a meeting with T. Haas or not, but let's try it. So we start these machinations of taking people to lunch. And so we were based in downtown Grand Rapids, so we based ourselves at Z's Bar and Grill. And for the first lunch, I took my mentee. I introduced that mentee to the entire serving staff. And I said, hey, this is a mentee. He's a student at Grand Valley, and he's learning networking, and we're going to use this as our office. And then we talked about all the things I learned in psychological sales school many, many years ago when I sold insurance right out of Grand Valley. And we did things like we would always put the guest in the best seat to face the windows and we would sit against the wall. We asked the servers via an extra tip to help us out by using titles like Mr. or Mrs. or Professor. And we tried to make that person that we networked with feel like the most important person in the room. So this went on, and pretty soon the student starts to gain confidence because these are easy, right? We take a professor to lunch or coffee. Hey, can we meet the department head? We take that person. In the meantime, as the mentor, I'm benefiting because I'm meeting all kinds of people at Grand Valley I didn't know. And that eventually led to an adjunct teaching gig for me too. But we went on and on and on. And finally, the student has enough chutzpah to walk into the president's office. Now, I don't know how many students do this. I'm not recommending people just go and do this. But the student walks into the president's office, at that time was in Zubberg, and on his own demands a meeting, but he has a story to tell now. He's just not a student who showed up. He shows up with a story about how his crazy mentor suggested we do all these meetings, and we did all these meetings and these things, and he's interested in talking to the president about his mentorship journey. I knew nothing about T. Haas at the time, and I was shocked when we were given time for a meeting. And so we were sitting across having lunch at Kirchhoff Center overlooking Zumberg, and we were talking about our strategy. And I said, you know, no matter what happens in today's meeting, you've won. This is awesome. This is a big deal. President's a busy person. We're going to get 15 minutes with the president in the president's office. This is cool. What are you going to say? And the student said, I think I'm going to ask T. Haas to be my mentor. And I'm like, bull, I like that. Okay. Well, long story short, we go in, T. Haas invites us in, and he came out from behind the desk, and we sat around the little round table there in the president's office, surrounded by his memorabilia from the Coast Guard. And we small talked, and then T. Haas got down to business and said, well, what can I do for you? And the one thing I hadn't prepared my student for was a yes, because the student said, well, T. Haas, I'd like you to be my mentor. And T. Haas, you know, very smart, says, well, what would that look like? And he didn't say no, but he didn't say yes. And the student or I had no answer for what that would look like, right? I didn't expect Tiaz to have, you know, meetings with his student or come out and do these things. So we kind of left it at that. But the student did contact me years later. It was one of those students that said, hey, I had to go do this meeting the other day, and I was asked to go, you know, bust down the door to go sell something to the CEO or CFO. And it was a lot easier than going to see Tiaz. And I used the tactics and techniques that we did to do that. So that's an example of kind of where it turned out well. I had another student whose goal in life at the time was to get an internship at 3M Corporation. I said, why? And they said, because my friends got one there and I think it'd be fun. And I said, all right, let's figure it out. So we started doing a little bit of digital research. We found out all about the CEO of 3M. And we found out that in addition to being the CEO, this person was very, very, we're talking like page 4 or 5 down on the resume, right? So they were interested in orphanages in Guatemala or something. And so we put together a packet, we did some research, and we got the student through his buddy who worked there invited to their national meeting or something. So I said, you know, the CEO is going to speak at this thing. So the CEO is going to come down from that stage, and this is what I want you to do. And so we rehearsed this whole thing. And what happened was the CEO came off the stage, was going back, and there in the wings was my mentee with a packet, and the cover letter said that his goal in life was to work as an intern at 3M. In addition, it had all the qualification skills for the internship that was, you know, set up. So this is Career Center stuff. So shout out to Troy Farley and those folks putting that together. But it matched everything they were looking for. But the thing I'm most proud of in our rehearsal is, and then the student said, and Mr. CEO, in addition to that, I'd really like to talk to you about your work in Guatemala because, insert story here. They offered him the job before he left the conference.
Wow.
I don't want this to sound like I did that. I was back to being Jerry the farmer. I was providing kind of a ground. I prepared the ground. I planted a seed. I may have sprinkled a little bit of my own manure through some of the things I said were, you know, likely, not likely, and watered it. And then the mentee grows, right? So it's not, I didn't do that. And I think one of the failures I see in mentorship is when the mentor feels like they either need to be the sage on the stage and know everything, or they try to meld the mentee into what they are. And the mentor's job is not to create a replicant of yourself. The mentor's job is really to make the mentee the best mentee they can be.
If a student came up to you and said they weren't sure they have time for mentoring, what would you say to them?
I would do a couple of things. First of all, the old coach in me, when people said they didn't have time to practice, I would say, hand me your schedule and write down everything you do in a day, and I will find time for mentoring. What they're really saying is I haven't made mentoring a priority, or if they're very introverted, they're like, prove to me how this pays off. Show me what's in it for me. If you listen to Don Lubbers in my podcast, he says the student must be mentored. Must. He doesn't say should, could, must is the word that he uses. I guess to be a little bit more of a salesperson about it, I would say, what do you want to achieve in your life? And would you like help? If the answer to those questions are yes, then you want a mentor. And I think there's very few easier ways to learn about life than through having great conversations. That being said, I think post-pandemic especially, your average freshman who's walking around at Grand Valley is really a high school junior. And most of your juniors who are walking around at Grand Valley is really a college freshman because they didn't get a normal 2 years. And for us who are more advanced in our experience, okay, so it's 2 years we missed out. We did some different things. We got to spend a little bit more time at home. For them, this was devastating. And we are seeing a huge dearth in human skills, as Dean Lawson at Seidman calls it, human skills, that to you and I seem maybe simplistic. But to them, just having a conversation, going to a business lunch, meeting somebody they don't know, is a big deal. And I think we're recovering from that rather nicely. But I think right now, if you're going to work in this world and get a paycheck, you need to have human skills. So long story short, you can't afford to not be mentored. You got to find time, and you're doing it whether you believe it or not, because your friends who you're surrounding yourself with are having a mentorship effect on you. The extracurricular activities, the clubs, all the stuff you do, that is a form of mentorship.
So you mentioned earlier this idea of deep mentorship. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So at some point, originally our mentorship program lasted one semester. And I found out that one semester is not even enough time to get to know each other, let alone get into what I call deep mentoring. So now we do a full academic year. And I have some folks at the end of the year say, can we keep going? And I'm like, yeah, you don't have to be enrolled in the program to do mentorship, right? Stay in touch for a lifetime. That's what I did. Deep mentoring comes after we've established the rapport and the respect with our mentorship partner to ask and be vulnerable. And vulnerability is the key word in deep mentoring. And I learned this from a pro mentor in our program who I appointed to an advisory position with me because I'm a raging extrovert and he's a raging introvert. And Jerry telling stories about, hey, I'm going to send you this conference and make you talk to a CEO. All your introverts in your audiences either turned off the podcast at this point or went to go be sick in the bathroom because that's the last thing they want to do. So this individual and I spent a lot of time developing strategies to help introverts understand why mentorship is important, and vulnerability and connection are those two words. So deep mentoring happens when somebody, and this is all relationship, human relationship, when somebody decides to be vulnerable and share something. And if you think back to all of your friendships, especially, there's usually a point in that friendship where somebody shares something that's pretty hardcore, pretty deep. And usually that is testing the waters to be a safe space. And when that happens, then the other person tends to share something. So I tell our pro mentors, and we actually do a workshop on vulnerability where we talk about this. And by this point, which is usually second semester, right now, winter semester, you know, share something with your mentee that didn't go well. And now the mentor's mind is, but wait, I was supposed to be this paragon. I am the telos of all things that I was supposed to be. I don't want to tell them when I failed or when I got fired or when I got divorced or whatever it was in your life that was difficult for you. But by sharing that, you open the table because you know what? Do you remember what it's like to be a freshman or a sophomore or a junior or just graduating and you have no clue while you've been honestly putting on a brave face and say, I'm going to go do the thing? You're like, not sure if I want to do that. And that vulnerability exists. And so I share with folks in my undergraduate days, I was not the world's best undergraduate student. So graduate student me with honors cords on speaking at graduation would have been appalling to undergraduate me who just didn't care, just wanted his degree and wanted to get out. But there was a time when I fell below the 2.5 standard for the Seaman College of Business, and I was in jeopardy of being dismissed from the university if I didn't get my act together. And that's when mentoring got really real because I needed help because I wasn't performing well academically. So that vulnerability is the key to deep mentoring. So being vulnerable, offering something out there, and then listening without judgment. Again, we're not there to reshape our mentees. We're there to farm, right? Get reaching the ground and pull that shoot out and make it become a tree. We're there to prepare the ground, to fertilize things to make it grow and get real.
Wow, you've covered so much today. Is there anything else you'd like to share or comment on that we haven't touched on?
I just want to, you know, tell people to really think about your mentoring relationships in your life. Those of you who were mentored or now realize you were mentored, reach back out to your old mentors and thank them. That means so much in keeping this going. Those of you who were mentored who want to thank those mentors, think about mentoring. If you've survived this long, you have the skills to mentor. There's so many great programs at the university. There's so many great places to give back to Grand Valley. That's not difficult to do, and it is awful fun to reconnect. And it's amazing by helping somebody else how much you're going to end up helping yourself.
Well, thank you again for connecting with me today. We want to promote anything that you have on your repertoire you want to share with us. Now would be the time to plug that. Do you have anything you want to share?
Absolutely. So I would be remiss. My social media team would draw and quarter me if I didn't mention the Seaman Mentorship Program. which just Google Seidman Mentorship Program. If you want to go to www.gvsu.edu/Seidman/mentorship, you can. You'll find us. You'll find our podcast. Anybody who's interested, you don't have to be a Seidman graduate to be a mentor in the Seidman Mentorship Program. And you can find sign-up links. We do that in the summer. And it's an academic year. It's an hour a month. And there's some great students out there who really want to talk to you.
Jerry, thank you again for all of your time and just the dedication you show to Grand Valley. It's very inspirational. And with that, I end today's podcast. Just letting you know, there will be another podcast about mentorship coming up in the next few weeks. And that will focus entirely on the Women in Cinema Mentorship Program that started just a year ago. There, we'll be interviewing one of our alumni mentors, as well as a mentee who's now a graduate herself. And thank you for sharing your time with us today at Alumni Live, the podcast.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film and Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad you're here. Thank you for listening. This episode is brought to you by the Dirk Koenig Memorial Film and Video Scholarship. Here is Gretchen Vintage remembering Dirk Koenig.
The Koenig Scholarship enables students to get that kind of an education, to be a good filmmaker, to be able to express their voice, and to continue Dirk's dream.
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description.